Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Real Talks. I'm your host, David Steele. Sorry about the camera, guys. I hope everybody's having a tremendous weekend, and I hope everybody's going to be celebrating it with their families and their loved ones, and eating a lot of good food, if that's what you do. So I thought what we'd do today is... we do the spoiler cast for Air today. So, as everybody knows, this came out on Wednesday. And so, I wanted to give everybody some time to actually go and watch the movie. It's fairly short. It's about 2 hours. But I wanted to give everybody a chance to go watch the movie. And basically, you know, digest it, absorb it. I mean, everybody has stories about this, so including myself. But as far as the times we lived in and everything else. So, yeah, I thought what we do today is do a spoiler cast on Air. And so let's jump right in. I love this movie. This movie is just Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. The whole cast. So I have 3 or 4 good points about this that I want to... talk about, because it's one of those things where this is and when I say he, I mean Michael Jordan. He is a multi-generational player. So you know, whether yourself or maybe you have children, you know, or grandkids or whatever, they know of Michael Jordan. He is one of the most recognizable faces in the world. And it's interesting because, you know, everybody, like I said, everybody has a story. So this honestly, though, this is a different kind of movie. This is not a biopic. And I'm sure everybody knows the premise by now, and it was in the synopsis, but when you know, clicked on it, it's the backstory. It's how Nike actually came and acquired Michael Jordan, going to Nike. And that in itself is a story in itself. And we'll get to that a little bit later, because I think that when you know the story behind it and you know what the screenwriter did and how it transpired, it was amazing. So the first thing as I said, there's 4 points. The first thing I really wanted to talk about was the acting. The acting in this movie was superb. And it really was amazing. So everybody had a huge moment. Okay, one way or the other, they had a huge moment. And so you could really tell the chemistry between Affleck and Damon. So let's back up for a minute, and let me preface it by saying this. Ben Affleck wrote and directed this film. Okay, I'm sorry, he didn't write this film. I stand corrected. He directed this film. He starred and directed in it, okay? Which is hard enough. So that being said, you could really tell the chemistry between Affleck and Damon. That was noticeable immediately on screen, like they were best friends. So that really helped. For me, this is Damon's second best performance. I am kind of partial to Rounders. I love that movie for personal reasons. But this is his second best performance, especially the monologue he had at the end, near the end. It was just amazing. Viola Davis. What can you say about her that already hasn't been said? Viola Davis is, look at it this way, guys. She's an EGOT winner. Viola Davis is an EGOT winner, and for all those that are not familiar with the EGOT is, it's like the Grand Slam in acting, okay? It tells that you're that multi-talented, okay? So it is an Emmy, it is a Grammy, it is an Oscar, and it is a Tony. And she is one of the few, I mean, you want to talk about rarefied air, this lady, this young woman has it. She was amazing as Dolores Jordan, Michael's father. She didn't have a big part in it, but when she was on screen, she was spectacular. And I can't say enough about this. And it's just one of those things where, so the scene that really stood out to me, as I said, everybody had a moment. This was her moment in the film. One of the best moments in this film was the scene where Sonny, played by Matt Damon, so they're trying to find the next big star because, you know, Moses Malone and everything else. So they had, you know, a couple of draft picks that they were trying to acquire the rights to. And Michael Jordan was going, you know, in the top five, and they all thought, okay, well, he's unattainable. So Sonny, okay, decides that he's going to take it upon himself and do something about this. So he goes down to North Carolina. And his agent at the time, okay, played by Chris Messina, who, by the way, was great. He was great in this. And even though he had a small part, I mean, the exchanges that he and Damon had or Sonny had on the phone were just priceless. Absolutely priceless. So he basically goes down, as I said, he goes down to North Carolina. And he speaks to Dolores. Now, that is his mother. So when he pulls up, James is there fixing the car, fixing the automobile. And so Dolores comes out and says, you know, why should we listen to you? And so, you know, basically they have a heart-to-heart here. And it's one of the most, it's one of the great scenes of the, I mean, the whole film is fabulous, but this is one of the great scenes. And basically, he tells him, he tells her, look, this is how these other meetings are going to go. You know, when he, you know, reenacts it for a little bit, but it's just the acting in this film. And it's just, it's awesome. And it's not just these three people. I should make that mention. Okay. You have Jason Bateman, you have Chris Tucker, you have Marlon Wayans. Makes a great performance, you know, for the one scene he's in. I loved it when he's talking with Sonny in the bar. Yeah, I mean, everything about it. This was top-notch Affleck, as far as I'm concerned. He was in it, obviously, he starred in it, but he was directing it too. So he was pulling double duty. And it was just one of those things where it's just a remarkable, it's remarkable to see how well he was able to do with this. And this film, you know, it had a $90 million budget. I mean, you know, it seems like a lot, but in the grand scheme of things, and I'm going to touch upon this a little later on, it really wasn't that big. So one of the other things, as I said, Tucker and Jason Bateman were awesome. I think we get, you know, even the fact that we get the backstory of Jason, what part of Jason Bateman's character, one of the scenes is where, Bateman is talking to Sonny and, he basically says, look, I know you had great intentions with this and everything else, but, you know, we need to kind of dial it back a little bit. And but he said, I understand what you were trying to do. So now I should say that Jason Bateman, okay, he as I said, was very good in this, and he played Rob Strader, okay, and that was his boss. That was Sonny's boss. So Phil was the CEO, okay. Sonny was you know, work for Rob, and so the whole basketball division. Chris Tucker, you know, had a great role in itself. And once again, you didn't see a lot of, but when you did, Howard White. And so one thing I enjoyed right off the top of this movie was, and it clearly reminded me of Steve Jobs, was when we're thrust into this movie, immediately you're getting vibes of 1984. you're getting all of these, you're getting a lot of pop culture references, you're getting the music, you're getting, you know, some items that were maybe introduced in 1984, like games and toys, and even the Apple Macintosh is in there. So there were a lot of cool things about it. And that, you know, that was one thing that really stood out to me. Now, obviously, it's a period piece, right? I mean, we are back in 1984 here, so it has to be authentic in that respect. But yeah, the acting was just, the backstory we got of Jason Bateman's character was just enough. It wasn't overbearing, and it wasn't like, oh my God, we need to go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper into this. So yeah, the acting was just superb, and just, there's not enough superlatives to have to talk about the acting. So let's move on real quick. And let's talk about the directing. So now we have the acting. Let's move on to the directing. So point number two for me was the directing. Affleck did a great job. Now, obviously, is this Argo? No. I mean, Argo is his masterclass, and that's always going to be what he's known for. I mean, he's done. This was his fifth or sixth film, okay? Gone Baby Gone, Argo, The Town, you know, things like this, Air now. And it was just small enough that it wasn't too overbearing, okay? It's not like it was a multi-million-dollar worldwide thing. This was shot very, very quickly, you know, and it was just, the film itself, okay, the film itself is only 111 minutes or an hour and 41 minutes. So it's under 2 hours. And in that in itself, it goes by very, very quickly. But yeah, so like I said, the directing, this is his fifth or sixth film, as I said. And I love, like I said, I really love how he, in some period pieces, you can have some aspects of it, but not a lot. And he really dug in. He really, really dug in. A la Steve Jobs. I'm going to reference that again, because in that context, you saw everything, you know, a lot of the news stories, you saw, you know, headlines, you saw pop culture references, you saw everything from 1984. And I got to say one more thing, and I didn't write this down, but the soundtrack. The soundtrack was amazing. That was one of the best soundtracks. And I'm thinking to myself, as I'm watching this movie, I'm thinking to myself, they must have paid an arm and a leg for all of these original, because they were the original songs from the 80s. And I'm thinking, I can only imagine what the market and that's probably honestly another reason why the budget was so high at $90 million. Because he wanted the authentic, right? There was not one song that was played in this film that was not a cover. It was the original song. And that is so vitally important, because you can have a song put into a movie, okay? And if it's a cover, then people are going to say, oh, well, you know, they didn't have the right amount of money for it. But this one was awesome. And I loved it. I mean, that's what made, that's what really gave this film the authenticity, right? Bear with me for a minute. I'm just trying to come up with, I'm trying to get for you guys, I want to list some of these songs, because this just shows you what I'm talking about, okay? So we have, as I said, these were all authentic, okay? You had Legs by ZZ Top, UK. You have, okay, so you have I Can Dream About You by Dan Hartman, Taking Breath, Breathing the Night Away. Just all of these different things. It's just there were a lot of original songs in there, and I think that's why this budget was as high as it was. Because these stars, look, you have three Academy Award winners in there. You have Matt Damon, you have Ben Affleck, and you have Viola Davis. So, but the director, and so the other thing too I wanted to touch upon about the directing was this was the very first venture, okay, for Artist Equity, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck's production company. Now, Amazon was the one that did this, and Warner Brothers distributed it, okay? So that's something to be said too, but it's one of those things where when you get this kind of cast and direction and you have a good distributor and now it's being done by their production company along with Amazon. And don't forget, guys, okay, just about a month ago they had Creed 3 come out, not for Artist Equity, but Amazon. So this was part of like Skydance Sports. And I'm going to get to that in a minute because that's an important facet of this whole thing. Which leads me into the third portion of this, okay? And that is the screenplay. The screenplay, okay, was incredible. And so I'm going to show you a couple other pictures here. So this is... let's go down here. So this will actually load. Bear with me, guys. So let's try another picture here. So I don't know why this isn't. Okay, so essentially, okay, the screenwriter, okay, was a no name. Okay, his name was Alex Condrey. And so... okay, there we go. Yeah, it was a bit slow there. But getting back to what I was saying, sorry about that, guys. So what ended up happening was, I mean, that's a shot of Sonny on the phone talking with Jordan's agent and, you know, Messina, okay, where he's basically having a conversation to try and find out where the meetings are going to be. Because he's trying to set up a meeting. Because originally Nike did not want to give him a meeting. So getting back to what I was saying about the screenplay. So this was done by Alex Condrey. Okay. Alex is, you know, was in isolation like everybody else for COVID. And the story goes that he was watching The Last Dance. Now that is the ESPN... award-winning documentary that was about essentially the last championship of the Bulls. And he was on a certain episode, and they were talking about Sonny. Now, I should preface it by saying this. A few years earlier, he had had a role in a 30 for 30 for ESPN. It was called Soul Man. And it was about Sonny Verasco's life. And so what ended up happening was he wrote the script. He wrote the script and he put it on what's known as the blacklist. Now, the blacklist is a place where you put scripts that are really, really good, but aren't, you know, nobody will take them. Nobody will be able to sell them. So he put this on the blacklist, not thinking anything of it. And he had had a couple of other screenplays that didn't do so well, but this one was picked up. So then, because it got picked up, okay, Convery he signs a deal with a first look deal with Mandalay Entertainment. Now, Mandalay Entertainment, okay, actually had the rights to, or were part of getting the rights to, getting the life rights, if you will, you know, for Sonny Verasco, the guy that actually Matt Damon plays in pictured there in the middle. And so at that point, he had access to all these archives. So he went back and watched all of these tapes and got a feel for what he actually was. I believe he's passed on since, but he got an idea of what he was like. And I should say one other thing that I didn't make mention of at the top. Ben Affleck had actually sat down with Michael Jordan and talked to him about this. Even though he wasn't in the film, even though you didn't see him in the credits and everything else, he sat down with Jordan and he talked to him about, you know, certain experiences and everything, what it was like back then. So, yeah, he signed with them, okay? He gets the rights. They get the rights. He watches the tape. He gets a better idea. So he's, as I said, he's watching The Last Dance, and they touched upon this in a very macro or big way, but they didn't go in depth. And he said, this could be a cool story. So he started writing it and not thinking anything of it. And so when it got picked up, like I said, that was a big thing. At that point, the last day of principal photography, or when they were shooting, okay, and by the way, he was on set for all of this, okay? He came over to Affleck, Ben Affleck came over to him, and he basically says, we're going to give you the sole credit on this film, which meant he was going to get a larger share of the profits, which meant that he was going to be get recognized more, because, you know, he, in the article that I read, he basically said that Affleck wanted to pay it forward because he remembers being that guy that was struggling writing. And of course they went on to win the Academy Award, Matt Damon and himself, for Good Will Hunting, and he wanted to pay it forward to him. So I thought that was fabulous. So now this guy has a name. He's one of the best. He put together this great screen, and there are going to be offers, you know, people knocking at his door all the time now, to do this. And it's just amazing to see. That being said, and by the way, I should say one other thing about this, scene here at the end of the film. This was improvised. This was completely improvised by Viola Davis. So when Matt Damon, okay, is having a conversation with Viola Davis on the phone, and so the premise was that they were going to take, she basically says, look, I'll take the deal with you, okay? I'll take the deal with Nike. You were right. I'll take the deal. But I want my son to have, you know, because they were going to sign him to a $250,000 contract. Now, back in that time, that's huge. Okay, Adidas and all these other companies were going to do the same thing. Now it's pocket change, but back then it was fairly large. That being said, she said, I want my son to be covered, so he gets a piece of every single shoe that's sold, even if it's a small amount. And they were having a conversation, well, that's not how it works. And so that's when Sonny went to Phil and said, look, you know, this is how, what she wants. And he says, screw it, just do it. Just take care of it. So, and it's very interesting because I want to get into a couple figures about what Jordan has since done, because it's remarkable. But this scene here is tremendous too, because back in the 1984 NBA, okay, it used to be that if you had a certain amount of, more than a certain amount of the color of your team, okay, they would fine you. Okay, they would fine you. So 51% of the shoe had to be white. And so the gentleman here on the left, okay, was the shoe designer. And basically said, here's what I came up with. And I'm going to see if I actually, because I have a photograph of it. Because, so what he did was, he actually, okay, so I thought I did. So basically what he did was he came up with the Air Jordan. So actually he was talking to his Jordan's agent. And so he actually came up with the running joke in the film is that he came up with Air Jordan. And so they gave credit to shoe designer. And so yeah, it was kind of it was a very funny sequence. But nonetheless, so I'm trying to find for you guys. Okay, well, nonetheless, what ends up happening is that okay, well, I can't locate it at the moment. So he comes up with a really cool shoe, okay? And because of the fact that he came up with a really cool shoe, there was a lot of red on it, which, of course, were the Bulls' colors, red and white. And so they were going to fine him $5,000 for every time, per game, for every time he wore the shoe. And so Jason Bateman's character and says, what if we just pay the fine? So, unbeknownst to Phil, of course, they said, fine, make the shoe. So, this is the introduction to their Jordan, which you see there. And it was just spectacular. So, you can Google what the Air Jordan original one looks like. It's, my guess is, and I'm not a shoe collector, so I don't know. My guess is it's probably in the neighborhood of $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000. Probably more than that. Because of how rare it is. So, but yeah, so they had the meeting with Michael and it was unbelievable. So there was one montage, and this goes back to the acting. There was one montage that Matt Damon has, that Sonny has. And so they put together a video package and, you know, watching the highlights. And so he basically says, he says, turn it off. So they turn it off and he basically has this 5 minute soliloquy and it's beautifully done, by the way, because you've got Jordan highlights mixed in to tell you what he is going to do. And he's talking about being great. And it was just unbelievable. And the way that Damon was able, and it just straight face right in the camera, just it was marvelous. And it really sold me. I mean, if I would have bought his shoes, you know. That being said, it was a fantastic soliloquy. And I loved it. Amazing. Matt Damon is a fantastic actor. That just proved it to you. Like I said, I think this is his second best performance behind Rounders. Rounders is it's a personal choice. I mean, everybody might like The Martian or something else, but for me, it's Rounders. Anyways, yeah, and just so the last thing I really wanted to touch upon today, because we've talked about a couple of things. Okay, we talked about the acting. And we talked about the directing, okay? And now we've touched upon the screenplay. And the last thing I want to do is touch upon the legacy. Because this changed the game, literally and figuratively. So because of this, okay, because of Michael Jordan getting a piece of revenue off of every single shoe that was sold with his likeness on it, he was set for the rest of his life.
Okay.
He was set for the rest of his life. He never had to worry about anything. Now, basically what this did is, number one, it put Nike at the top of the mountain. Okay. This put Nike at the top of the mountain. Nike is now the perennial number one shoe that anybody will go to. Okay. It's not Reebok. It's not Adidas. It's not Converse. It's Nike. And that it's a sign of elite. Okay. You know, they even make a reference to this slogan where, you know, Matt Damon and Jason Bateman were walking in the office and says, you know how the slogan got made? Now, I don't know this to be true. You guys can Google this and tell me. Leave me your thoughts down in the comments about that. And he says, yeah, it was, you know, he's like, no, how? He's like, a guy was being executed for the firing squad. And he says, just do it. And he's like, really? He's like, yeah. Now, I don't know that to be true. I think that's probably a little exaggerated. But so I'm taking that with a grain of salt. Okay. That being, I mean, they did do the research for this film. So I don't know, to be absolutely honest. Anyways, I go back to it. But his legacy is every single piece of Jordan clothing, shoe wear, hats, keychains, everything. He gets a piece of. Now, because of this one brand of shoe, it was genius because, as the designer said, or I think it was Sonny that came up with the idea, he was watching highlights of Michael Jordan's final shot in 1982 when he won the championship. And he saw something. And it was like that aha moment. And so he goes in and he talks to Phil about it and, you know, and basically talks to Jason Bateman's character about it. And he says that he's looking for the ball. You know, he wants it. He's, you know, he's got that Eye of the Tiger. Ironically, Eye of the Tiger, you know, I mean, the song didn't play by Survivor, but, you know, at that time, Eye of the Tiger was a big thing back in 1984. Nonetheless, they sold him. You know, he sold everybody on the idea. So when that happens, and so he has a legacy, though. So, I mean, he is the most recognizable, probably the most recognizable player in the world. More than Magic Johnson, more than Larry Bird, more than Michael Jordan. So this just, so in this scene, in this final scene here, I'm going to go back to this final scene. When they're talking, and she says, and it was a brilliant line. And he says, a shoe is just a shoe. And her ad-lib line was, a shoe is just a shoe until my son steps in it. And, like, whoa. Okay. And so, the rest is history. Now, I wanted to, like I said, Jordan is now a worldwide brand. It's not just a shoe brand. It's a worldwide brand, okay? You can buy t-shirts. You can buy duffel bags. You can buy keychains. You can buy socks. Any single clothing apparel you can think of. Boxers. No kidding. I'm not kidding. Any single piece of clothing you can imagine, you can buy. He is a brand. I wanted to read a couple numbers because it was interesting. And it just goes to show you how much money this one deal made. So throughout his whole career, okay, he made $90 million. Now you think, my God, that's a lot of money. And it is a lot of money. You're right. But when you're seeing, so to, in today's deals, when you're seeing deals that are, oh, I don't know, $100, $200, $250 million, and half of that's guaranteed, it's not that much money. Now, truth be told, okay, he got $30 million in one season. Okay, that was when he came back. Okay, that was, I think, for that 97-98 season, he came back because he was on the fence of coming back. They paid him $30 million. So a third of that was there. The other thing too is when he won Sportsman of the Year, okay, he had 6 different endorsements going at one time. Now he made I want to say between $50 to $60 million from those endorsements. Okay. He had Nike, he had McDonald's, he had Hanes, he had Duracell, he had Gatorade. He had all of these endorsements. So he was not only getting the revenue from the Bulls for playing in the games, but he was getting all this money from the actual sponsorships. So, I mean, obviously, but that being said, the $90 million was throughout his career. So the reason I bring that up is because today, as of last year, he made as passive income, not doing anything, because of this one deal that was signed, he made $256 million. That's right. $250 million. Think about it like this. A movie like Infinity War or Endgame cost $256 million. He made that in 1 year just for passive income. So the brand itself is worth $5.1 billion. It has a net worth of $2 billion. And every single year, for every single Michael Jordan shoe that is sold, across this country, right now, today, as I'm doing this spoiler cast, okay, he gets 5% of every single shoe sold. Every single, and you have to believe, okay, you have to believe that because of the success of this movie, Jordans are going to skyrocket. They're going to be sold at a feverish pace. And it's just astounding to even think about. Now, that all being said, the man is set for the rest of his life. He never has to worry about money. I mean, that's why he's able to go buy an NBA team. Okay. Not only that, though, he's been an ambassador to the game. Okay. He has been just an absolute amazing player. I remember Jordan. I'm 47. So I remember the Michael Jordan years. Okay. It was like right in his prime. I remember 91 when they beat the Lakers. And that was, you know, the big thing. Michael Jordan is arguably not only the greatest player of this generation, and I say that because there have been a lot of great players, right? Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, Isaiah Thomas. I mean, I could go on and on and on. He's the only man to make a brand of himself. Now, don't get me wrong. Magic Johnson's a billionaire, okay? He never has to worry about money again. I mean, he has stake in the Los Angeles Dodgers, you know, and several other things, okay? Larry Bird, you know, I'm sure he's living comfortably somewhere in French Lake, Indiana right now. Isaiah Thomas is on the NBA network, so he never has to worry about money. But that being said, Jordan is the only player to be able to capitalize on not only his likeness, but his popularity. And so there's another whole facet to this, and I want to bring this into play. Because what Sonny did, okay, is not only land Michael Jordan and Nike, But a couple years earlier, okay, he helped what we have now known as the NIL. Okay, so back in 2008, okay, there was a big lawsuit between Ed O'Bannon and the NCAA. And in this lawsuit, what they talked about was O'Bannon was basically saying, look, I'm getting no money because EA Sports, okay, or the NCAA is making money from using my likeness. And this went back and forth for several years. Should we pay college athletes? Should we not pay college athletes? What sports should we pay? What sports shouldn't we pay? How much money they should get? A whole boatload of things. Couple of years. So he was an advocate. Okay. He was an advocate that they should get paid. Okay. A couple of years later. Okay. One of the courts ruled that athletes, collegiate athletes, because they were always considered amateurs. Okay. And as long as you were an amateur, you couldn't make any money. Doesn't matter what sport you played. It could be golf. It could be baseball. It could be basketball, whatever, football. Okay. At which point, Sonny basically was one of the proprietors of helping this move forward. And a couple of years ago, the courts ruled that athletes, collegiate athletes, could make money all off of their likeness. So what ends up happening now is that any athlete from any D1 division school, NCAA school, can make however much money they want to. And there are a lot of avenues. Okay, one thing about it was before is you couldn't go out and get a job because they wanted you to, you know, stick to your studies. And that was a joke. But what a lot of these athletes are doing now is they're going on with a website out there. It's called Cameo. And anybody who's familiar with Cameo, okay, knows that you can have actors and musicians and internet celebrities and, you know, everybody. So what you see is, okay, you see these athletes start going on Cameo and they're registering as talent. And they don't need an agent. They don't need any representation. And let's say there's a quarterback in, I don't know, Nebraska. That's a fairly popular quarterback. Now, he can charge whatever he deems he wants. Let's say it's $75. So for $75, what you can do is you can then get a message from Jack Smith, okay? And he can do a personalized message for maybe it's a birthday message or it's an anniversary message or it's a commencement message or it's a congratulations message or whatever it is. And you pay, you know, so then that athlete will, and I don't know all legit, I can't imagine it all goes to the athlete, but a lot of it does. And they get paid. So let's just say myself, okay, what I could do, okay, not that I'm that big yet, hopefully, but I could register as talent on Cameo, okay, and I go through the process, and once I'm approved, okay, I then say how much you want to charge, $15, okay? So for $15, I can actually give them a little 90-second message. They give me all the details about whatever it is, and then I'll write something up and do like a 90-second message and send it out to them, and I'll get a piece. So what I'm getting at is Sonny Verasco was extremely instrumental in not only landing Michael Jordan and Nike, but helping athletes in general. And that's huge because we now have the NIL rule, okay, which allows athletes of any sport in collegiate, you know, amateur sports to make money. And that's a big, big thing, you know, moving down the road. So it's one of those things where boy, it's something else. I mean, you see, you know, what he's able to do, and it's just this one guy basically changed the sporting industry. I mean, not only did he, I keep saying it, but Nike was able to land Jordan, and he did this outside. It was unbelievable. So it led me to a couple of questions, though. Okay. One of the major questions I was thinking is, if this was so successful, like I said, this is not going to make its whole budget back. Let's be honest. Okay. It's going to make $16 or $17 million this weekend because it got crushed by Mario and, you know, but I think it's going to do very well next weekend because the rage of it is over. But it got me thinking, could, because they do have their own production company, right? Could Affleck and Damon then tackle something else? Another worthy type of business-like movie, like a Moneyball, for example. Okay, that movie was not about baseball. It wasn't a biopic of Billy Beane. It was the business side of it. How did Billy Beane go from being the general manager of the A's, which he still, I think, believe he is, to basically going and doing and revamping not only how his baseball team played, but how the whole sports played? I mean, we have pitch counts today. We have, you know, all these different strategic moves. Part of that was because of Beane and what he did. But it's the business. Could you see them tackle other business-like movies like this? Because they are out there. I mean, I was saying this the other day in a space. And by the way, guys, if you want to, if you'd like to follow me on Twitter, it is, and it's kind of small right now. Let me get the, let's go full screen here. You can follow me right down there, Wannabe Rounder on Twitter. I'm doing spaces quite frequently. I'm always on Twitter, you know, answering questions about movies. So, yeah, definitely, guys, go hit me up, and we can definitely talk or even follow me. So back to that, though. I'm wondering if they wouldn't tackle the one movie I would love to see, and I don't think they might. I mean, I was watching something today. So today is Saturday. By the way, happy Easter to everybody, to all those that celebrate Easter out there for tomorrow. So Tiger Woods, this is Masters Week. I was watching a program with Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods and the current champion Scottie Scheffler, and it was pre-recorded. But it got me into thinking, and I know there's a Tiger Woods documentary on HBO Max right now. It got me to thinking, could they tackle the Tiger Woods story? I would love, personally speaking, I would love to see that. Because everybody loves a redemption story. Everybody. Doesn't matter what sport, it doesn't matter what, who it is, what they love. They absolutely love a redemption story. And that man has gone through hell and back. You know, I'm not condoning any of his actions or anything else. What I'm saying is, for the longest time, he was extremely successful. And then it all came crashing down. Okay? And you had, you know, not only his physical ailments, but, you know, outside the professional world. And he was a mess for like 4 or 5 years. And then he had several knee surgeries. And it was just one thing after the other, after the other. And you thought this guy would never be able to do anything again. And he came close in a couple of majors a couple of years ago. And then, of course, in 2019, he did what nobody else thought he could do. And that was win the Masters. I would love to see a Tiger Woods story that was done right. And who knows? Maybe the screenwriter Maybe the screenwriter actually tackles that. Maybe, maybe not. It's just a thought. Because once you get in a niche, okay, you want to stay in that and do it. And I think this could be his niche. I think this could be his niche, you know, type of screenplay. And look, there are plenty of those out there. Look at Moneyball. Look at, you know, a couple of others. And they're out there. I mean, of course, Moneyball was done by Aaron Sorkin. But so hard to compare. But nonetheless, I think that would be a fascinating movie. Anyways. Yep. That's about it, guys. That's all I have. As far as personal things are concerned, as I said, I watched Michael Jordan growing up. Best basketball player I've seen in my life. I mean, I know we've got LeBron James and we've got, you know, all of these other players out there. For the will to win, for the will to get things done. I Kobe Bryant was in, you know, God bless his soul. You know, he's no longer with us, but for what it was, Kobe Bryant was probably the next best player I ever saw in my life. Unfortunately, I never got to see him live, neither Jordan. However, that all being said, I remember that run that just, you'll never see it again. The only time you ever saw that was back with Bill Russell and Havlicek and Cousy and everything else. But I mean, to win, they could have won eight if he had not retired. If he had not stepped away from the game, and there were many rumors about why he stepped away from the game, and look, he lost his father, and I get it. The fact is that they could have won eight championships. They could have won eight championships, hands down. Eight consecutive championships, no doubt in my mind. That being said, you had Houston step in when the titles in, you know, those couple of years, but the greatest basketball player I've ever. And not to mention that, he has multiple gold medals. I mean, he has so many accolades, I could be here for hours listing them. Okay, I'm not going to do that. Go look into the life of Michael Jordan. Whether you've seen the movie or hasn't seen it, go look into the life of Michael Jordan. Because I think that when you look into it and you see what has happened in his life, you go, wow. You take a step back and go, my God, this man's been through hell and back, through a lot of adversity. And, you know, but yeah, I love this movie. I love this movie. The only one criticism I have, it's near perfect. The only criticism I have about this movie is they use that 360-degree shot about 5 or 6 times. In that movie. That's it. That's a critique on me, on the filmmaking portion of it. It's nothing to do with the story or anything else. But because when you use that shot so many times, because it's good. I mean, I always compare it to like a Silver Linings Playbook. That one shot there at the end was magnificent. It was magical. When you use it so many times, it takes away from the potency of the film. And but yeah, that's it. I mean, it was not a false note in this movie. I'm only ashamed it didn't make more money. And I think that if they decide that, you know, if Affleck and David decide that they want to do another film like this with, you know, Amazon backing and everything else, this is going to make a lot more money. They just got crushed by Mario. And I think that there's nothing you could do about it. But what I do think is this. I do think this is going to do very well next weekend. Okay. It's going to make about $17 or $18 million this weekend. I think it's going to do very well this weekend. And I mean, depending on how The Covenant does, you know, directed by Guy Ritchie, coming out, I think, next week, this could really do good business. So it's only up in here, you know. And then don't forget, this is going to be on Amazon Prime in probably, I don't know, 6 weeks, 2 months. So it's going to, if you didn't catch it in theaters, guys, you're going to be able to watch it on Amazon Prime with an Amazon Prime subscription. And it's a fantastic, what? It's 90 minutes, you know? So yeah, it's a fantastic movie. I love it. I hope they stay on this. And congratulations to not only the cast and crew of this film, but congratulations to Alex Convery, because he is now in Hollywood. He is now in Hollywood. You're going to see him have a lot more job offers. Okay, guys. That's it. That's all I got for air. I just wanted to share my thoughts on the film. And a couple things coming up, mainly the big thing. So tomorrow, we have Easter. As I said, happy Easter to everybody that celebrates it. We'll be back on Monday. I'll be back on Monday with a show. I am looking into, and I think I'm going to sit down tonight and watch it, the first one, and get this ready for you guys. I am going to be doing a Mission Impossible rewatch of all of the films until Dead Reckoning Part 1. So as it stands right now, it's going to be every Friday. You're going to get a release, okay? Mission Impossible. So it's going to start in the beginning of June, okay? So Mission Impossible is going to be June 2nd. Mission Impossible 2, the 9th. Mission Impossible 3, the 16th. Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, the 23rd. Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, the 30th. And then Mission Impossible Fallout on July 7th. And that will lead right up to Dead Reckoning. So you guys are going to be getting my thoughts about all of those movies. And yeah, stay tuned. We've got a ton of stuff coming up on the channel for the rest of this year. Lots of spoiler casts, lots of shows, you know, a couple interviews here and there. And as I said, guys, be on the lookout. Go follow me on Twitter. Be on the lookout, because I will do spaces. And, you know, once I do a space, then, you know, you'll see it. You should see it pop up, and then just come join in. Okay, guys. So take care of yourself. Do the three things you need to do. Be careful. Be safe. And have a great holiday. And I will see you back here on Monday. I'm David Steele, and you have been watching Real Talks. Bye-bye, guys.